What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland, and here is your 5 at 5. Trying for a rebound. Stocks looking to claw back some of yesterday's losses as investors push past a weaker-than-expected GDP read and Meta's earnings mess. Today, it's once again all about big tech with a very different spin. Starting with Alphabet, the stock is popping and set to join the $2 trillion market cap club. Then there is Microsoft as investors push aside CapEx concerns, instead focusing on growth in the cloud and with artificial intelligence. Plus, a stellar report from Snap that has that stock surging ahead of the open on an unexpected but very welcome profit beat. And later, getting set for the latest read on consumer prices and what it could mean for the Fed's policy decision next week. It is Friday, April the 26th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange, coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being with us on a Friday morning. Let's kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures after some real whipsaw action yesterday that saw the major averages close well off session lows on the back of that weaker than expected first quarter GDP print and what was the busiest day of first quarter earnings season. Take a look at futures right now. You can see they are solidly in the green. The Nasdaq up just about 1%. The Dow looking like it would open just about 60 points higher. The S&P up almost 0.75%. Big story once again, that's big tech, led by Google parent Alphabet, in which you could call a triple crown earnings report. First quarter revenue and net income coming in well ahead of estimates. $17 billion in free cash flow, announcing a new quarterly dividend as well, and a $70 billion share buyback program. The stock is popping, as you can see, off of its highs of after-hours trading, up just about 11.25%, but still, as we said, popping. It's also set to join the $2 trillion market cap club at the open. Microsoft, not too bad either. Top and bottom line fiscal third quarter results also coming in above estimates. Revenue growth, however, that was just a bit weaker than expected. And CapEx coming in pretty hot, with CEO Satya Nadella telling shareholders to expect more of the same in coming quarters. Then there's Snapchat parent company, Snap, and what's being described as really a stellar report. Beats all around, including earnings with an unexpected profit, revenue, daily active users, and guidance beat. This is Snap's first positive stock reaction to earnings in 2 years. Taking a look, Snap shares up just over 23%. And trying to keep some of those equity gains in check, a quick look at Treasuries with a two-year note hovering right around a 5% yield ahead of today's PCE inflation report, also known as the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. Taking a look right now, we're seeing the two-year yield pop back up right now, 4.99. It actually crossed that 5% yield yesterday. And right now, looking at the 10-year, 4.68, trading pretty close to the highest level since November of 2023. Okay, that's your morning setup. Joining me now on all this and much more is Sophie Lund-Yates, lead equity analyst at Hargreaves Lansdown, and Ryan Dietrich, chief market strategist at the Carson Group. Good morning to both of you. Ryan, if you don't mind, I'm going to start off with you. We saw a sell-off after that GDP report yesterday. Give me a sense. It came after weaker than expected GDP, which is kind of counterintuitive to the way we've seen economic reports work in recent weeks. It has been the trend that the hotter report leads to the sell-off. Were you surprised by this at all? Or in your mind, is it just part of that seasonality that you see during an election year? You gave us a chart that shows during the months of April, May, and June, there's just historically some seasonality.
Yeah, Frank, good morning. Thanks for having me back. I mean, listen, after a 30% rally, right, that we had over the past year, the huge rally off the October lows, you look, some indigestion made sense. And in an election year, like we just said, you know, April, May into maybe early June tends to be kind of weak. Then you get a surprise summer rally most election years. So just be aware of that. But looking at that GDP, as a lot of people talked about yesterday, consumption was still strong, right? Investment was still strong. The parts that matter for the economy were good. It was because inventories and exports took away over 1% of GDP. So listen, you can slice and dice all you want. We weren't overly concerned. What clearly upset the apple cart, though, was the inflation data. Now, that's quarterly PCE, like you just mentioned before I came on. Monthly PCE comes in later today. And just to put a bow on this, when you look at that quarterly data, I work on financial services, right? Most of the guests work on financial services. Financial services, fees are higher. Why is that? Because the stock market did great last year. That was a big reason why the quarterly PCE yesterday, Frank, was a little hotter. So we're anxious to see what today is. We think inflation, this inflationary trend is still in play. Yes, I know the last 2 months been a little rocky. We think today could be some good news, and the market kind of looked past that GDP number and realized, hey, earnings season's still been pretty good. And you got to be impressed by that reversal, because 24 hours ago, things were pretty ugly. Now we're doing a little bit better, and that's something.
Yeah, I mean, earnings season has been very strong, to your point. Sophie, coming over to you, GDP, it appeared in some ways to show the impact of higher rates on the economy and leading to a bit of a slowdown. In your mind, that GDP report, does it have any read on the mega cap tech trade? Obviously, right now, we're seeing the markets move higher on reports from both Alphabet and Microsoft.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, you know, the macro picture is always going to affect super growth stocks like this. However, what I would say is, the effects of things like this are more muted than they would usually be. You know, the market is far more interested at the moment with those outlook statements and with the pure play individual stock stories and the growth outlooks and the runway for AI. So yes, it does matter. You know, if we see some dramatic moves in either side with the macro, yes, that will affect appetite for growth broadly, growth stocks, that is. However, the impact of the macro is a lot more diluted than we've seen in previous times.
I want to go back to that GDP, just one data point in there. Business spend, that actually accelerated. It was up over 3%. At the same time, Sophie, we're seeing Microsoft and also Alphabet increase their CapEx quite considerably. Microsoft increasing their CapEx by 80%, Alphabet by 91%. Just a day ago, Meta got dinged for that. Why do you think that Alphabet and Microsoft were actually rewarded for these huge jumps when it comes to CapEx spending?
Sure. I think dinged is quite a nice way to put what Meta went through on this. So there's a reason for this. And primarily it's because the market is spooked by what Meta's doing, because the strategy behind that increased and accelerated spending is a lot less clear cut than it is for the likes of Microsoft in particular. So for example, you know, the path to monetization from AI for Microsoft is a lot clearer than it is for Meta. And there simply isn't the tried and tested track record. It's more of a leap of faith saying, look, I've got the right ideas and this spending is going to pay off. It's a leap of faith. Whereas the likes of Microsoft have got a clear track record of already pulling it off. So that's why the market is a lot jumpier around Meta's plans.
All right, Ryan, coming back over to you. You already kind of mentioned this, but you believe that PCE is going to be cooler than expected. You're believing there's going to be a positive surprise here. How do the markets react, though, in your mind? I mean, is this, again, a market-moving economic report? Or has this already been kind of figured out that we're just going to take a few more of these for the Fed to make a definitive decision?
Great point. It's going to take a few more positive inflation data points, because we haven't had too many yet. Let's be very clear. But yeah, we absolutely could see a little bit of a pop, I think, if inflation after yesterday's worry, when everyone looked a little deeper into that quarterly PCE number. But again, you know, look at what's going on, right? We've got unit labor production quite low. You've got high productivity. We know wages are strong, but comfortably coming back down. So again, there's parts of inflation that we all know are being stickier, specifically the shelter. People have talked about that on this network, including myself, for a while now. So it's not a perfect scenario, but we're still optimistic, Frank, that we're going to have, you know, maybe two cuts this year. And I know not many people thought that, but again, 3 months ago, when everybody's saying seven cuts, we were saying, well, the economy's stronger. We might see more like three cuts. So now we think the pendulum has swung way too far, where we're saying no cuts, maybe a hike. And again, we'll see more with the inflation data. Go ahead.
Ryan, I want to jump in. So your forecast is two cuts. I mean, some people believe there may be zero. In your mind, is it important that we get two cuts, or just the Fed indicates that we get cuts to keep the rally going? Obviously, we've seen a big pullback in the markets in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and again, the big pullbacks, why have they happened? I mean, we've had a huge rally, so it could be any reason. But I think just as long as the Fed continues to give a clue that, again, they're not going to hike. The hiking cycle's done, which they have. Honestly, that's what they've given. So, again, the inflation data matters. At the end of the day, though, why have we seen less potential cuts this year? Because the economy is strong and overall earnings growth continue to impress and we continue to see higher earnings growth going 12 months out. Those are the things that truly matter. And consumption, we're still making 200,000 to 300,000 jobs every month, last I checked as well. So they're still positives, Frank. We're still overweight equities. Maybe once we get this through this little kind of seasonal potential lull, we can get a summer surprise rally, which again, you tend to see a lot in election years. One final comment, selling may go away. Okay. We're all going to hear about it next year. Just know this, worst 6 months of the year are really strong in election years.
All right, Sophie, I'm going to give you the last word right now. Ryan believes we could see two cuts this year. We have seen the Magnificent Seven mega cap trade kind of break down since Jay Powell said that rates are going to stay higher for as long as they're needed. Is this PCE report, is it important when we're talking about mega cap tech and investor confidence in it? Because for some reason, investors seem to have kind of turned their back on tech as we've seen the rate cut path become less clear.
Yes, it is very important because it speaks to this fact that actually where we're at with inflation now, as much as it's very much moving in the right direction, these last few points of inflation are incredibly sticky. And I know we're all sick of hearing that word, but essentially what we know is that all of the spending that can possibly be pulled out of the economy has already happened, meaning that what is left is incredibly entrenched. And that is problematic. And that is why we are now seeing heightened nerves. So yes, it does matter to mega cap tech in a big way. You know, we don't want to see interest rates really protracted or overly protracted. However, as I was kind of alluding to earlier, really at the moment, what is going to move the dial even more are those comments on AI and outlook and who's going to win this very interesting race that we're in the middle of at the moment.
All right, two more big reports to go. We have Apple and Amazon. Sophie Lund-Yates and Ryan Dietrich, great to see you both. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For much more what's driving the markets and the trading day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. All right, busy day stateside, not to be outdone by the action. Right here in London, Sylvia Amaro is here with me in the studio with much more on the early action over in Europe. And Sylvia, we were on Street Sounds earlier. You mentioned yesterday were 300 companies reporting. Today's not light, though. 100 companies reporting results.
Exactly. So it's not as busy as yesterday, but nonetheless, still a very busy day for investors. We are hearing from 100 companies across the continent, and I want to bring you some of the highlights so far this morning. Let's start with Airbus. They reported a miss on its first quarter operating profit, down 25% on the year at 577 million euros. However, the plane maker is sticking to its guns for the year and raising its A350 production target. And you can see at the moment, though, shares are actually moving lower by about 2.4%. I want to take it to another French stock. Rémy Cointreau reported a better-than-expected 0.7% decline in fourth-quarter sales. The cognac maker says it is seeing an improvement in one of its major markets, that's China. Sales for the full year declined 19% ahead of analyst expectations, however. And in another corporate news out of France, Total Energy's net income dropped 22% on the year in the first quarter as higher refining margins only slightly offset a sharp fall in natural gas profits. Now, the oil and gas company also said it will buy back $2 billion of shares this quarter and declared its first interim dividend of 79 cents per share. And of course, you can see that that has actually boosted the stock a little bit with the shares now up by about 0.2%. Let's see what else will happen throughout the session today, Frank, but no doubt a very busy day for investors over here in Europe.
All right, Sylvia, thank you very much. All right, I've got a lot more to come here in Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, much, much more on this morning's big tech results as we dig into what Snap is doing right now and what Meta is doing apparently very wrong. Plus, shares of Paramount Global popping as takeover talks appear to be moving forward. And later, much more big money movers and why Intel continues to fall behind in the AI rat race. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The market doesn't joke around. So why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Back to Worldwide Exchange. Time for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Hanau back at CNBC headquarters. Silvana, happy Friday. Good morning.
Happy Friday indeed, Frank. Good morning to you. All right, let's start with JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon. He's reiterating his skepticism around the potential for the U.S. economy to achieve a soft landing. In a new interview with the Wall Street Journal, Dimon cautioned that investors are too optimistic, citing sticky inflation and interest rates. Dimon saying, quote, I'm a little more worried it may not be so soft and inflation may not quite go away as people expect. I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about 2025 or 2026. Meanwhile, Walmart announcing Rob Walton, that is the longest serving member of the retailer's board and oldest son of founder Sam Walton, is stepping down from the board. Walmart revealing it has nominated Chipotle CEO Brian Niccol to replace Walton. If elected, Niccol would become the fifth new independent director added to Walmart's board since 2017. And Paramount Global and Skydance Media are moving closer towards a potential deal to merge the two media companies. Sources telling CNBC the two sides are narrowing in on how to value Skydance's assets as part of a merger and how much equity to add to the company as a part of a recapitalization. Now, those sources add Skydance and its private equity backers are shooting to finalize terms of the deal by next month, Frank.
Interesting. A lot of movement in the streaming space. So much going on
there.
It really
is, yeah.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much.
You got it.
We're going to see you later in the show. All right, time now for your big money movers. We're going to start off with shares of Intel. They are sinking after the chipmaker posted mixed results and issued weaker than expected current quarter guidance. You see shares are down almost 7.5%. First quarter sales also coming up short, leading investors to believe the bottom for Intel is not in just yet, despite comments from CEO Pat Gelsinger that he expects, quote, sequential revenue growth to strengthen throughout the year and into 2025, thanks to AI and what he says is a delayed refresh cycle. In comments to CNBC, Gelsinger adding that growth should start later this year.
We delivered a very solid Q1. You know, we met revenue, we beat on EPS. You know, we gave a outlook for first half to second half, a much stronger second half outlook, as we saw with growth across every business forecast for the second half. And somewhat like the market indicates, maybe a little bit of market weakness in the first half of the year. So we're working through that.
And a dim forecast overshadowing Roku's otherwise strong second quarter. The streaming service warning of a higher bar for growth ahead and moderating profit in the second half of the year. It says it's dealing with tough growth rate comparisons because of past price increases and a customer shift towards lower priced ad supported tiers. Shares of Roku down about 3.5%. Skechers charging to the finish line after crushing earnings expectations, reporting a record quarter for sales thanks to new products and surging global demand. The sneaker maker is now raising guidance for the current quarter with a sales target of $10 billion by 2026. Shares up more than 11%. For much more on the quarter, be sure to catch CFO John Vandemore today at 11 a.m.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Salesforce shares, they're rebounding this week on reports. Talks to acquire data management company Informatica have been broken off. Speaking exclusively with me at its Salesforce World Tour event in New York City, Clara Shai, the Salesforce AI CEO, says she can't comment on the Informatica deal, but did say the company has a growing need for data management tools.
data is absolutely foundational to all things AI, from the data that goes into training models and fine-tuning models to the data that's used for something called retrieval augmented generation. That's giving context to the large language model, really to reduce hallucination rates and improve accuracy and relevance.
Salesforce also announcing wider availability of its AI Copilot and new partnerships with AWS, Google Cloud, Snowflake, and others to manage data. Of course, Salesforce is just one of the major tech companies looking to monetize AI Copilots, but adoption and the impact on productivity remain questions about the emerging tech. All right, let's get a check on more of this morning's headlines. NBC's Richard Louie joins us in New York with the very latest. Richard, good morning.
Frank, good morning to you. Donald Trump's presidential immunity defense is being considered by the Supreme Court now. During arguments Thursday, most of the justices seemed in favor of at least some protection from criminal charges, but not the absolute immunity that Mr. Trump is claiming as his defense in his federal election interference case. That trial has been delayed until the court rules on this matter. As pro-Palestinian protests grow on college campuses, the University of Southern California now canceling this year's main commencement ceremony. That event is usually attended by about 65,000 people. The university says it would take too long to process thousands of guests with the new security measures put into place because of the protests. Offense, evidently the name of the game on the first night of the 2024 NFL draft. To little surprise here, the Chicago Bears drafted USC quarterback Caleb Williams with the first overall pick. A record six quarterbacks were taken in the first round. Williams was followed by LSU's Heisman winner Jaden Daniels, selected by the Washington Commanders, and North Carolina's Drake May, who's set to kick off a new era for the New England Patriots. Just on the first day, all of that. Frank, back to you.
All right, Richard, thank you very much. You have a great weekend.
You too.
Before we head to break, we're watching shares of Boyd Gaming. Take a look. They're taking a hit ahead of the open. First quarter revenue coming in line with estimates. Earnings, however, falling a bit short. The company telling analysts that severe winter weather hit its Midwest and South segments hard and early in the quarter, and that competition on the strip remains intense. Shares down just over 8.5%. We're back right after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead on this Friday morning. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures as we always do after what was really a whipsaw session yesterday. Can't even get the words out. I saw the major averages close well off session lows on the back of that disappointing first quarter GDP print and Meta Platforms earnings miss. Take a look at futures right now, however. Big reversal. We're seeing them in the green across the board. It looks like the Dow would open up just about 40 points higher than NASDAQ, the big winner, up over 1% higher in the pre-market. Key to the markets today will be the March PCE report, or the Fed's preferred gauge on inflation. Economists expecting core prices to rise 2.7% year over year. That's just a slight tick lower than just a month ago. Today's report's out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. It is also the last major economic data point before next week's Federal Reserve policy meeting. Ahead of that, we're taking a look at the bond market. We've seen some upside moves in the bond market. Right now, the benchmark's at 4.68, highest level since November of 2023. The two-year right now at 4.99, holding just below 5%. We saw it very briefly hit 5% yesterday, right below that level right now. Okay, that's your morning setup. Now we're going to turn our attention back to two of the biggest money movers of the day. We're talking first, Alphabet soaring. Google's parent company says first quarter profits jumped by more than a half, and revenues rose by 15%, beating forecast even as it continues an expensive push into AI. The company also announcing a $70 billion buyback and its first ever dividend of 20 cents per share. Elsewhere in tech, Snap is just skyrocketing as the company swings to a surprise adjusted first quarter profit. Revenue and daily active users also beating estimates. It's also guiding second quarter sales and user growth that is above estimates. Like its bigger rivals, Snap is leaning into AI to boost its ad business. Let's get insight into both companies and much, much more with Richard Kramer, founder and senior research analyst at Arete Research. Richard, it's good to see you in person. Likewise. You and I were just commenting. We're both tall. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah. Let's start off with Snap, if you don't mind. Really a surprise here. Before this quarter, I think generally, and you tell me, there were some concerns about the digital ad business. Then Meta came out with a miss on digital ads.
Yeah, I think in the case of Snap, it's a relative minnow compared to Meta and Google when you look at the absolute revenue base. I mean, Snap is guiding to about $50 million higher than consensus was for second quarter. Put that in for a $1.2 billion business, put that in context of Google's results, which just had a $7 billion incremental addition to its ads business in the quarter. So it's really kind of a rounding error. It's brought forward by the same trends that you see at Google and Meta.
All right, so it's a minnow. You say it's a rounding error, but is it encouraging when you look at the overall picture? Because I do want to get to those Google digital ad numbers. 2% higher than the estimate at just over $66 billion.
Yeah.
12% higher year over year. So you're saying this report from Google is more reflective of the global ad environment.
Absolutely. I mean, Google and Meta together have well over half of the global digital ad market. Both of them added $6 and $7 billion respectively in terms of additional ad spend year on year. And when you add that with Microsoft, you're looking at about $25 billion of incremental revenue that these three big tech companies pulled in year on year, which is just unprecedented. We've never seen that kind of economic concentration, and they're backing it up with massive investment. So Google is on a $50 billion CapEx run rate, Meta's $40 billion, and Microsoft $60 billion. They are plowing money into this AI arms race like never before.
Yeah, Alphabet CapEx up 91% year over year, so that's a big commitment. Most of that spending is expected to be spent on artificial intelligence. So we just heard Snap saying that they're using AI to boost their ad business. We heard Mark Zuckerberg says he's investing in AI to boost the ad business, but didn't have a clear path forward. So kind of straighten us out, Richard.
Right.
Does AI, does it really matter when it comes to the ad space? I don't think we've quite seen the impact of it when it comes to these co-pilots and things. Like, we're still waiting to really see it.
Right.
But in the ad space, is there a definitive use case? Is there a clear path forward?
So the reality is AI has been driving the ads business for years already.
Really?
All of those Google search recommendations, the YouTube recommendations, the ad placements on Meta, they are all driven by machine learning or AI technology already. That's already embedded in the business. What Zuckerberg is rightly pointing out is going to take more time is to develop the new products, the assistants, the things that consumers have to get comfortable using. But make no mistake, the entire programmatic digital ads business for Meta and Google runs on AI today.
Really? You know, I guess I never really thought about it before, but you're right. Like, if you are even just talking about something to your friend, all of a sudden it just pops up on your timeline as an advertisement. So I suppose that is an AI function. We do have some other players coming up. One of them is Amazon with a big growing digital ad business. Is the Google report a read on what we're going to see from Amazon, or is the Meta report a read from what we're going to see from Amazon?
So actually neither. And while Amazon has a digital DSP, demand side platform business that's growing very quickly, the majority of their ads business is sponsored products listings on Amazon itself. And there, if you want to sell on Amazon, the largest e-commerce platform in the U.S. and most of the Western world, you have to sponsor your products with advertising. So that's the core of their ad offering. But it does show, especially with Google calling out strength in their retail business, that pay-to-play sort of ad placement for retailers and for product producers is essential.
Does that mean that Amazon's going to benefit from using AI in its ad business as well? Or
absolutely. Okay. All of these companies, there's no way they could place the scale of $60 billion or $35 billion of digital ads in a given quarter without automating that business.
All right, a lot to look out for. Richard Kramer, always great to see you. Thank
Likewise.
You for being here. All right, coming up later today, you don't want to miss an exclusive interview with Snap CEO Evan Spiegel. That's on Money Movers coming up at 11 a.m. Eastern time. All right, time now for a check of more of this morning's big money movers. Our Silvana Hanau is at CNBC HQ with those. Silvana, back over to you.
Hey, Frank. Thanks. All right, so let's start with Boston Beer. Getting a nice pop today as it reported a surprised first quarter profit and revenue that was well above forecast. We're seeing shares up about 6% in the pre-market. Now, shipments rising nearly 1%, almost all on growth in its Twisted Tea brand, offsetting declines from Truly Hard Seltzer and other brands. Sales of Twisted Tea jumping 21% in the first quarter. All right, now shares of medical device maker ResMed are moving higher. First quarter profit beating estimates on strong demand for the company's sleep apnea devices. ResMed's market share getting a boost recently as rival Philips is facing a lengthy halt in sales of its machines until improvements are made at its U.S. factory, and shares of ResMed up about 9% in the pre-market. All right, and shares of Atlassian sharply lower. Now, this despite a third quarter profit and revenue coming in ahead of forecast on continued demand for AI cloud services. cloud revenue rising 30%, and the company is guiding fourth quarter sales above estimates. Atlassian also announcing co-founder Scott Farquhar will step down from his role as co-CEO, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. Looking at shares right now, down 5.25%. All right, coming up here in Worldwide Exchange, more on the big tech bump helping lift the markets and whether Microsoft's early charge in the AI arms race, is it already paying off? But first, we got a few of your top trending stories. Let's start off with the Beatles. I'm here in London. The Beatles firing off One Last Call for Help, the guitar used during songs like Help, You've Gotta Hide Your Love, and It's Only Love, heading to auction in California. It's expected to set a world record for the most expensive Beatles guitar ever sold. I didn't even know that was a whole category. Pickleball looking to create even more of a racket, pun intended. United Pickleball Association announcing a deal with Global Sports to bring the PPA Tour and Major League Pickleball to India. This marks the first international deal for the association. I wonder how it's going to compete with cricket over there. And Sweet and Sour taking a whole new form. Oreo rolling out a new cookie with Sour Patch Kids baked. I don't know about this. Sour Patch Kids baked right inside. I just don't know about this one, but the cream-colored cookie has colorful flecks of Sour Patch Kids along with cream filling with more. No. This doesn't work. It's like Oreos or Sour Patch Kids, in my opinion, but this is still going to come out. We'll see how it all works. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's not just Alphabet in the spotlight today. Microsoft also taking center stage. The company blowing past fiscal Q3 estimates thanks to huge sales growth in the cloud on the back of its very expensive push into AI. Those AI investments, however, proven to be a bit of a double-edged sword, with company CFO Amy Hood telling analysts near-term AI demand is actually higher than Microsoft's available capacity. CEO Satya Nadella, though, still remaining optimistic about growth opportunities on yesterday's earnings call.
Our AI innovation continues to build on our strategic partnership with OpenAI. More than 65% of the Fortune 500 now use Azure OpenAI service. The number of $100 million plus Azure deals increased over 80% year over year, while the number of $10 million plus deals more than doubled.
And joining me now with his takeaway is Timothy Horan, Senior Analyst in Communication and Cloud Services at Oppenheimer. Hey, man, good morning from London. It's good to have you on the show. You know, you and I, we often email or talk when I'm trying to figure out something about the hyperscalers. So right now, Azure has about 36.5% of the market share globally right now. All this AI enthusiasm, does this have any potential to move it higher when it comes to market share, maybe even in the first spot, taking out AWS?
There's a potential that'll take a couple of years, but they're growing in the low 30% range right now. You have AWS growing about half that rate. So if this continues, obviously, it's just a matter of time.
So really just a matter of time. So in your mind, how real is this AI Copilot adoption? I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. They say it's kind of mixed. The adoption is kind of, you know, it's a push and pull to it. It's not going that smoothly. People are using it and companies are certainly buying it, but actually getting the employees to use it. So in your mind, this report, what does it say to you about the horizon when it comes to these AI copilots?
Well, they kind of give some really good statistics out there. Teams users of AI, their actual usage doubled sequentially on actual transactional basis. And they rolled out 150 upgrades of the OpenAI for 365, the Copilot, just in the quarter alone. So, you know, this is a very, very early product. They think the demand is extremely, extremely strong. And you're basically seeing that in the CapEx numbers. They would not be basically doubling their CapEx spend from $30 billion to $60 billion without some indication that the demand is going to be extremely strong. And if you look at just even the CapEx guidance of the big three, Meta, that just reported, Meta, Alphabet, and Microsoft, the guidance is basically going from $100 billion of CapEx this year to $150 billion. So the proof is in the pudding. If you're going to spend that kind of money, you're going to really believe that you're going to get a payback in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, you're mentioning CapEx. So Microsoft guiding that its CapEx is CapEx grew in this last quarter, 80% year over year. For Alphabet, it was a 91% increase. Why are investors reacting positively to this as opposed to when we saw Meta? Certainly got hit. I called it ding. Somebody said, let's put it lightly, got dinged for its CapEx guidance.
Well, I mean, a couple of years ago, the CapEx was a lot more speculative. We didn't really know if the metaverse is going to kind of develop, but we are seeing basically a supply-demand imbalance. All our channel checks suggest that there is just not enough accelerator or GPU capacity out there. There's not enough data center capacity out there. And the productivity improvements that you can see from AI are really astonishing. And that's why Microsoft saw accelerated growth in Azure. That's why there's a supply-demand imbalance. Azure would have grown much faster if they basically had all the compute that was needed out there. But we are seeing just outstanding productivity improvements in over every single segment of the market. I mean, Microsoft thinks our whole IT basically stack is going to be massively transformed because of this. So you're just looking at unbelievable productivity improvements.
All right, so you sound very much so. I mean, we have some people coming on. Some people are very bullish, like Dan Ives, about these co-pilots. Other people a little bit more skeptical. But you sound like you're 100% sold. So AI clearly seems to be a catalyst for Microsoft in other areas. Do you see it also benefiting? Like they unveiled some new services during the quarter. They also have a digital ad business, something we don't talk as much about. Is AI going to benefit these other segments as well?
No, absolutely. And it's basically they highlighted, you know, Coca-Cola, $1 billion AI, basically contract. But when you look at drug development, you look at the healthcare industry, you're going to see just a massive productivity improvement in almost every single segment of our market. And we're just very, very early in the process here. It's not going to be a straight line process, you know, at all. We actually think we're going to stay undersupplied.
Well, Tim, I was actually asking you about Microsoft's device business. And then also its ad business. So does AI boost those businesses for Microsoft? And I know you're pretty sold on them helping other businesses, but what about their other internal businesses?
A great point. The device business is going to take a little longer to kind of develop, but it is helping a bit on the margin at this point. But that'll take some time. On the ad business, clearly every segment that Microsoft's using this internally, they're basically talking about eating their own dog food. But they didn't really specifically mention the ad business much yesterday.
All right, we've got to leave the conversation there. Microsoft shares up over 4%. Timothy Horan, great to see you as always. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange. Thanks, but no thanks. A mega mining merger looking like it may be over before it even really starts. We'll be right back right after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your global briefing. We start with global mining giant Anglo American rejecting a $39 billion takeover proposal from its rival BHP. Saying in part, it significantly undervalues the company and its future prospects. In a statement, Anglo's chairman calls the bid highly unattractive and says it creates substantial uncertainty and execution risk for the company, its shareholders, and other stakeholders. You can see shares of both companies trading lower right now. The Bank of Japan keeping rates unchanged in today's monetary policy meeting. This decision comes after inflation in Tokyo during the month of April. It came in lower than expected. The BOJ also says it will continue buying bonds at the same pace as previous months. And several earnings movers all around the world. We start with Remy Cointreau says significant growth in China boosted sales in its cognac division. A bit of a different story than we've seen from other luxury makers. First quarter profit at NatWest falling by 27% due to competition for savings, lending and mortgage products. And Swedish defense equipment maker Saab reporting a 28% increase in operating profit and raising its organic sales growth outlook. You can see shares of Saab actually falling lower on that report. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, stocks looking to close out on a very strong note as investors brace for the latest look at inflation, the moves to make in a critical trading day ahead. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg and his net worth plummeting by more than $18 billion following Meta's historic stock drop yesterday. You see the chart. Shares this morning, you can see, rebounding just a bit, up 1%. The strong start from Microsoft-backed Rubrik set to continue after its trading debut yesterday. Shares of the data security company rising as much as 25% before ending the day up 16%. You can see right now in the pre-market, up over 0.5%. The FTC voting to restore net neutrality rules that prevent broadband internet providers like Verizon, AT&T, and our parent company of Comcast from favoring particular websites and apps over others. JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon reiterating his skepticism around the potential for the U.S. economy to achieve the so-called soft landing. He's warning that investors are just too optimistic. Walmart's longest-serving board member, Rob Walton, is stepping down, the company nominating Chipotle CEO Brian Nickel to replace him. And sources telling CNBC, Paramount Global, and Skydance Media are narrowing in on how to value Skydance's assets as part of a potential merger and how much equity to add to the company as part of a recapitalization. Paramount shares, they're popping on the news, or they were popping on the news, I should say, actually down 2% after hours. All right, stocks looking to close out the week on a strong note, with the S&P and the NASDAQ looking to break multi-week losing streaks ahead of today's PCE inflation report. Taking a look at futures right now, you can see they're in the green across the board. The Dow, I believe, hitting its highs of the morning, looking like it would open up about 60 points higher. The NASDAQ, the big gainer, followed by those earnings reports from Alphabet and Microsoft, up over 1%. For much more on the trading day ahead, I'm joined here in London by Beata Manthi, global equity strategist at Citi. Good morning. It's great to see you here in person.
Morning, likewise.
All right, I think we got to start with this PCE report that's coming up at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time in the U.S. How important is it not only to the U.S. markets, but to the global economy? In your mind, do you feel like this could be a market-moving event?
It is going to be very important, right? All eyes are on it. And the view of our economists has been that if it comes at 2.7, this is still the threshold for the Fed to go ahead and cut in June. Now, if it comes higher, and of course, yesterday's data suggests that the level could be around 2.8, then there are question marks about the timing of the first cut.
Wait, you still think a June cut is on the table? I mean, do you think many people in the market, investors, are seeing that cut on the table? Because it felt like Jay Powell in mid-April, he kind of shut the door on that.
There is still a small chance it would happen. But of course, the likelihood and market pricing suggests it's going to be a bit later. So if it comes at 2.8, then perhaps we still get a July cut.
Okay. I want to talk to you about the Magnificent Seven mega cap tech trade. We got reports from Microsoft and Alphabet, pretty strong reports. There was a lot of concern about the concentration in the market and the risk of this possibly being a bubble that could burst. Clearly, after you see Microsoft and Alphabet, investors have a lot of confidence in these two companies. Going forward, do you still see the mega cap tech trade, this Magnificent Seven trade, being something that continues to power the market, or are we going to continue to see a rotation into other sectors?
That's a good question. And of course, well, it's not a bubble if it's underpinned by the strength in the fundamentals. And our view has been all along that this reporting season is going to be extremely, extremely important. It's another trigger catalyst in our view for the direction of the equity market going forward. So our view, our models, what's priced in for EPS by the market models have been suggesting that the US market, especially the big tech, big growthy companies, have been priced for perfection. That means right. That the bar to satisfy the market is quite high, right? And in turn for Europe, the market is more fairly priced. So
okay. If
reports come in line with the analysis, okay. For the U.S., the numbers have to come much, much higher. And we see that playing out in the market this week, right?
And you favor Europe and emerging markets over the U.S. right now. You think there's more upside opportunity there?
So what we see going forward, if we don't see too many cracks in the global economy, and so far so good, we see continuous upgrades to still low levels, right? Especially in Europe. But the trajectory is happening, we think, in Europe. The ECB will go ahead in June. Okay. Sentiment measures are improving. So we think it's going to be, we are coming back to the environment that is going to be conducive of the broadening of the market. And these two should...
Okay. I know you can't pick individual stocks, but you say there's a whole lot hanging on this PCE report. You are in favor of two cyclical sectors. One's industrials, one's consumer discretionary.
Yes.
We're going to show a chart from April 16th when Jay Powell said rates are going to stay as high as long as they need to be. Consumer discretionary down 1%, industrials up just about a third of a percent. Are you concerned that commodity inflation is going to hit industrials and that consumers in the U.S. are stretched? And what cycle are we in right now? We're talking about cyclicals. Are we in a rate cutting cycle? Are we in a lower inflation cycle? I mean, what cycle are we in that you like cyclicals?
That's the most important question, where we are in the cycle. So our view is there is no cycle anymore, right? Because traditional cycles are based on credit booms and busts. This time around, we didn't have a credit boom. This is why we not necessarily need to have a big credit bust. Now, what has happened over the last few weeks in the market, these sectors being slightly down? Well, we need to step back and put them into perspective of the markets hitting very euphoric sentiment after they've gone up so high over the past 5 months, right? So that's what then on its own was suggesting the market was ready to take some profits.
Okay.
And we've had quite a few negative catalysts happening at the same time. So geopolitical flare-up and, of course, the bond yields. Yeah,
yeah, quite a few. Beata, we have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank
it's great
you.
To see you in person. All right, that's going to do it for us. Futures are higher. That's going to have a great weekend. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.